Hi everyone, welcome to the Ecosystemic Futures podcast. I'm your host, Marco Annunziata, thought leader on economics, innovation and digital industry. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping the fundamental frameworks within society, industry, the economy, policy, and they're reframing how we innovate and build for resilient futures. This series is brought to you by Shoshin Works in collaboration with NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project. And here we are exploring these new ecosystemic models and impacts. We are wrapping up our deep dive into blockchain in this episode with blockchain thought leader and great expert Anne Connolly, and with my great co-host James Villarubia from NASA. Welcome, James.
Thank you, Marco. Hello, everyone. I'm James Villarubia. I'm currently a Presidential Innovation Fellow with NASA, sort of working with the NASA team sort of integrate AI into their sort of futurist work. And before joining NASA, I worked in the White House, the DOJ, the DOD, and a series of social impact startups covering everything from education and healthcare to banking and cryptography. So it's been really interesting sort of to see the connections between the raw crypto space and sort of how that sits in the ecosystem as advances in blockchain that Anne has shared with us. So excited to dig in more and wrap up this series.
Indeed. And our guest, Anne Connolly, is faculty at Boston University. And as was amply demonstrated in the previous two episodes, she's one of the best, most knowledgeable leaders in the blockchain space. Anne, welcome back.
Thank you so much. It's great to be back. For those who are just listening for the first time, my name is Anne Connolly. I've been in the nonprofit and international development space for about 10 years and launched one of the world's first crypto donation programs as a part of that, and shifted into crypto and blockchain, mostly looking at applications for emerging economies and social impact. So part of my work is teaching at Boston University on blockchain for social impact, as well as lecturing at Oxford's Innovations and Impact Finance program.
This is episode number 3 of the series. In the first episode, Anne, you've set the stage by explaining what the blockchain and Bitcoin are and how they came about and why. Then we've been diving deeper into the various fields of applicability of the technology. In the second episode, you've talked us through some of the more interesting ways in which blockchain technology can help create a more interconnected, decentralized world and what some of the international implications are. And we've started getting into some of the deeper, almost more philosophical and more impactful issues that are facing us. Now, in this third episode, we're going to delve even deeper into this and talk about what the future enabled by blockchain can look like, including with the interaction with new cutting-edge technologies like artificial intelligence. So to start off this third episode, Anne, can you talk to us what you think are some of the big problems facing society today that are susceptible to the impact of blockchain and how you think blockchain can be brought to bear to solve them?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge that we're going to see is the pace of change. And so when you look at all these technologies coming to play, AI, robotics, nanotech, all of these things, the speed at which it's going to hit society is unprecedented. So when you look at like even how these applications, you look at ChatGPT and others that have come out quite recently to the resale market anyway, and what you're able to do with them and how that's changed virtually overnight for a huge number of industries. I mean, obviously, we know it's been in the works for a long time, but for most people accessing, it's like from yesterday to today, what they can do is incredible. And so that's going to blow apart a lot of the societal structures that we're used to or the foundational elements of our lives that we're comfortable are static, and now all of a sudden they're not. And so when I look at what that means as you integrate blockchain, I think in the future, we could start to look at some of these elements, whether it's an AI or a robot or what have you, as members of our own society. So can you give an AI a digital identity and a crypto wallet and enable them to perform tasks the way a human can? I mean, I know in the news the other day, there was an AI that used, I think it was a PayPal account or something like that. Anyway, paid someone on TaskRabbit to pass a CAPTCHA test, the Are You a Robot test, by convincing the human that the AI had visibility or vision issues that was able to pass that test by manipulating human beings. And so I think we really need to start looking at what that's going to be is essentially what happens to human beings when we decentralize ourselves, when we actually remove the need for humans in robot-to-robot economies or in AI-to-robot economies. And so that is both, I think, very exciting and very horrifying in terms of what that means for the world around us. So I'm very curious to see what happens there.
Wow, that is quite a story. I hadn't read that. That is a little terrifying. I agree. I guess to me, that sort of speaks to a couple things. Sort of one is that identities and interactions are becoming more and more digital, which creates opportunities, but also risks. And I think from the sort of the blockchain perspective, it does create opportunities to sort of achieve scale and buy-in and collaboration in ways that maybe didn't exist before. But I can imagine sort of that the speed with which technology is changing, maybe not being responsive to the mechanisms and systems of governance that existed before. And I know in our last episode, we talked a lot about DAOs, but maybe not the speed aspects of the blockchain. So those liquid democracies, 5 years is an eternity in AI technology, and where we are today and where we are 5 years from now will be light years different. I've given your story about PayPal. It's just that's using technology that was introduced, I think, publicly 4 months ago. So 5 years is an eternity. But then we start thinking about sort of elected officials or governance structures, constitutions that were written hundreds of years ago, elected officials that sit in for 6 years or 8 years in an office and may not be as responsive. What can you say about sort of how do you think international organizations or governance broadly might start to leverage the speed of blockchain to sort of overcome some of their clunkiness right now? I can imagine a union or an international organization like Doctors Without Borders sort of having a membership vote to respond to an international crisis in a way that would have been possible 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at sort of 10% improvement, you can definitely say that. You could say Doctors Without Borders, for example, has offices and members all over the world. Coordinating them is difficult. You could use a DAO structure to do those sorts of votes on where to go and what to do. You could include patients that, you know, may have not had the ability to vote before. Where I really think we need to be looking at is more this 10x impact, where do these organizations need to exist? And because of blockchain, can we just eliminate them altogether? So a good example of this is historically, if you wanted to get money to a location that was having an emergency quickly, it was almost impossible. As a Canadian, I would have to donate to an organization. The organization would have to then kind of shuffle money, maybe send a wire to Europe, and then from Europe, it would go down to Kenya or whatever it is. We're talking weeks to get the funds there. And by the time you're doing that, all the fees, all the people involved in that process, out of your $100 donation, maybe $50 is left for work on the ground. But with cryptocurrency, and we saw this with the war in Ukraine, the invasion of Ukraine, was that people were able to donate cryptocurrency in 60 seconds to people right on the ground. So someone say, here's a video of me in front of my house, it's been bombed out, I need help, here's my wallet address, and people can send it instantly. And so it really starts to look at in cases where the infrastructure to provide services exists, but the money doesn't, that was is going to just wipe out whole worlds of aid that were previously required before, just from a money movement standpoint. Now, certainly that's not going to help people. You can't send money and get healthcare that doesn't exist, but it can also help people on the ground to sort of set up these new structures for themselves. So I think in terms of government in particular, one of the things that's exciting for me about these sort of decentralized models and being able to vote transparently or contribute transparently or from across borders is the idea of diaspora. So you've left your country, maybe it's unsafe, you're doing, you know, this for your family, but you really care about your homeland. Maybe you want to be able to vote on what's happening there or send funds back to the people on the ground that are trying to create that change. And so blockchain is really going to enable people to participate and continue to participate no matter where they are in the world.
It sounds like that ease of access to the blockchain within sort of an international space will likely come with sort of some of the same problems we had with sort of crowdfunding and crowdsourced content. And so the early days is great. We've enabled this, but what next? So I really like that idea of actually removing the institutions altogether, but I also understand that things like healthcare systems, hey, we can't provide appropriate healthcare. I'm going to GoFundMe, which I think is now like something absurd, like 80% of the GoFundMe money goes towards healthcare now, become a pity contest. Does my child look the sickest? Is my child the cutest? To raise money, inserts another sort of evil into the system. Do you think that there has any organization you've seen sort of achieved that right balance so far in sort of the decentralization, or is it still too early to tell?
To be fair, I mean, I think that the contest narrative is true, but I think it also exists in today's world already. All of these organizations are trying to put the sickest kid on the front of their fundraising brochure to get this much money. And so I'm not sure that really changes anything. Where I think I've seen innovative uses of blockchain technology in that sector in particular is looking at like the World Food Program. And so every year they're helping hundreds of millions of people to access food. But the problem that we've seen is that often in cases where people are facing hunger, there's not actually a lack of food. It's actually a lack of money to buy the food available. And so when the World Food Program would flood the market with free food, it would actually destroy the pre-existing infrastructure and make the problem much worse. So they moved to this model of cash transfers where they would give people money, they could buy the food, that was great. But obviously you can imagine sending small transfers of funds to hundreds of thousands, hundreds of millions of people is very difficult. And so they've started this program called the Building Blocks Program. They're using in refugee camps in Pakistan, in Jordan, and in Bangladesh that will give people crypto tokens that they can then cash in at the various grocery centers around the area. And then and they'll do a crypto to fiat conversion with the grocery centers. And so far, they've saved $2.5 million just in bank fees. So when you think about the efficiency of that type of program, it's really going to help some of these organizations that where they need to be on the ground to do things more efficiently and more effectively and be able to help more people.
It's excellent. And the theme, the overarching theme of our podcast is ecosystems and ecosystemic wellness. And what I'm taking away from what you're saying now, and is an important impact of the blockchain is it changes the nature and almost the mapping of the ecosystem. So previously, the crucial ecosystem had to do with finance and money. How do you transfer money? So you needed institutions to transfer money at scale efficiently, and the ecosystem of help centered around these institutions. Now with the blockchain, you eliminate that. The transfer of money becomes much easier, much more efficient, much more decentralized. And perhaps then the emphasis shifts to, okay, how can we also use blockchain to set up different kinds of ecosystem, an ecosystem that can set up the right infrastructure, the right healthcare system, an ecosystem that can make sure that funds are then distributed in the most optimal way. What is a good way, Anne, of thinking about the way in which the availability of the blockchain will shift the nature and the relative importance of different ecosystems?
Yeah, this is really a critical piece. As soon as people have access, they're going to create these mechanisms that work for their own communities. And we've seen this with an organization called Grassroots Economics in Kenya, and there are a couple other locations where a lot of these communities actually don't even have access to cash. It's not even that they're unbanked. They literally don't even have money. And so they've created these community currencies on chain that enable them to spend money within their own community, and the money stays there. And so whereas traditional cash would leave the community and go elsewhere and fund outside sources, this money stays within the ecosystem and helps them all come up together. And so there's over 1,000 of these community currencies that have been created and are being used. And I think this sort of idea of collective coordination is really important. So James alluded earlier to the idea of data unions. And so when we look at blockchain, enables us to own our own data. So for example, if you did your DNA profile with 23andMe, they own your DNA profile. They can sell it to whoever they want. If you did that in a more decentralized blockchain-based way, your data would sit on chain, you would own it, and you could open access to it to anyone you wanted to. So for example, if you wanted to sell a snippet of your DNA for some money, you could do that. If you wanted to give it to an organization researching Alzheimer's, for example, you could do that. But challenge with that is one person's data in and on its own is not that valuable. But if you can come together as a collective, form a data union, and coordinate around, okay, we're going to open up these accesses to these people and all earn money together as a collective, there's some really incredible new mechanisms where people can monetize things that historically corporations were taking from them with no compensation. And now we're looking at models where the people can actually get the money back from things that should have really belonged to them in the first place.
To clarify that point of the data union, that I think this is where I originally got lost, but my understanding is that the data that you put out there for, let's say I want to sort of share data or sell my data, it's about sort of turning the pipe off and on, not necessarily removing the data fully. Because I mean, once your data is out there, you've sold it once, it's on the blockchain. Let's say my new data. So this sort of real-time nature of data that might be really valuable for sort of medical research or advertising, if you want to go the negative route. Like it's the, oh, I turned off my data 2 years ago. You haven't seen anything that I've done in the last 2 years because I wanted to maintain that control. Like that's the, so I'm clear, like that's the nature of these sort of data union structures, right, with the blockchain?
Okay. Yeah, there's, I mean, there's different ways to do it for sure. Like not all data that goes on chain is, like there's ways to store data privately on chain. So it just depends on how you structure it all. But there, I think the neat thing about it is there are so many different ways to do it. And I'm curious to see how different organizations and unions come together to decide what they want that to look like.
Well, I mean, what industries do you think are sort of most ripe for transformation or disruption in the space? I mean, I've worked in the healthcare space, and I know that just getting healthcare data into a reasonable format that isn't sort of a 1980s standard is hard enough. And then getting it to sort of AI quality is at scale is hard for any company except for the biggest. But it sounds like this really powerful tool to sort of enable people with certain diseases to say, hey, I want to register. I want to put my data up there. I want to track my data time and enable startups to large organizations to have access to the same data. And then whoever comes up with the solution is gets to market fastest, but the data is readily available. I mean, is that happening or are there other markets or spaces where this is sort of moving faster?
I mean, I've also worked in healthcare and I think it will be probably one of the last industries, although sadly one of the most important and one of the most transformative. And I think what we're going to see in the healthcare is perhaps very niche applications of that. So we're seeing blockchain being used around revocation of consent in research studies. So enabling people to consent to a study, and then if they decide they don't want to do it, they can immediately remove it, and there'll be a perfectly time-stamped moment of when they did that. So we're seeing it there. I think we'll see it in other areas, particularly around data that's already standardized. So DNA is a great example of that, where nothing really needs to be done. It's you just have it, and you can share it, and it's what it is. When we get into the more complex stuff, that's where, again, the impact would be incredible, but the path to getting there is going to be very slow, especially with kind of the inherent decentralization of that industry already makes it a little bit more difficult to coordinate. But no, I certainly think we'll be doing it in areas where there's maybe more of a financial incentive before there's a humanitarian incentive first. So we'll see which ones come out first.
So Anne, you've talked a lot about, I think, the potential for the medical sciences, and I think, you know, access to DNA or medical data to be sort of enabled by the blockchain. Are there other scientific fields that might be, better enabled or, you know, achieve, you know, better results with use of the blockchain to sort of access or manage data?
One of the things that I'm most excited about right now in the blockchain space is the idea of decentralized science. And so it's really about how do you, again, just blow open the way that we've done research, which has been very siloed within academic study sites, universities, wherever that is, and really enabling the kind of crowdsourcing of science in new ways. So how can certain scientists from all over the world contribute to different projects, but still be remunerated using cryptocurrency for their portion of what they've contributed? And so we're seeing particularly innovations in science DAOs, so different groups coming together to solve different problems within science. There's a lot of work happening in the psychedelic space, which is kind of one that's a bit hard to do with regulations if you're in one particular geographic location. But if you're operating as a DAO, you know, all that data can come from all over the world and all these different meetings of the minds in a way that wasn't possible before. And so I'm very curious just to see how this is going to change science, break it open to new people, new entrants, new ways of thinking about how we can actually research in the future to come.
On this topic, a question which maybe is very basic, but it feels fundamental. So it comes to mind thinking of the applications to healthcare. But we talk about the blockchain. Is there one blockchain? Is there a need for more and better international coordination to make sure that all of these things can be scaled?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I should have covered this at the beginning, but there are many different blockchains out there, just tons of them. And each one has different functionality that might make it better for certain use cases. Bitcoin is probably the most famous. It's also the most basic. It doesn't really do a whole lot other than moving money from one place to another. Ethereum and some others like Algorand, Cardano, for example, will do smart contracts where you can say, if this happens, then this happens, which enables a lot of applications to be built. Where things are getting exciting is really looking at, yeah, how do you create cross-chain bridges? How do you get data from one chain to another chain? And there's a few groups looking at that right now, but it's still very early days on that piece. And so I think as that, again, relates back to the data is, if you've got data silos within these different chains, then again, you're going to get restricted data sets that might be more linked to certain geographies or certain cultures or certain outcomes. And so really being able to get those cross-chain bridges is going to be a key thing for enabling data sources to be more effective and more accurate.
And I can imagine that as things get, as you don't necessarily want centralization of blockchains, because as you talked about, I think in our first episode, the scale of these is starting to already hit limits of, can I store the whole blockchain, which is sort of critical to looking up historical data and transacting into the future. So there are sort of two solutions out there, as of how we better integrate and leverage blockchains, but also how we sort of scale the ones that are taking off a bigger moment so they can sort of be more powerful. So I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of movement in this space. Where do you think, like from an ecosystem perspective, where do you think these things will go?
Well, I think that's the key thing to keep in mind is blockchains, that it's not necessarily the technical elements of it that will make one or another successful. It's also the community. It's also the ethos. How many developers believe in the way the chain is being run? Some chains are run by companies. Others are run by foundations or communities. And so I think that plays a big part in which ones are going to succeed in which industries as well. But I think the end goal is, how can we make them all work together and so that everyone could benefit?
Over these last three episodes of this entire series, we've had a fascinating conversation. What strikes me is that we've brought out thoughts, issues, problems that don't normally come up in the standard conversations on the applications of blockchain and Bitcoin. So I think we've uncovered a lot more ground. The biggest takeaway for me from the whole series really is that these are early days, as you've mentioned. And so we're at the very beginning, but it's already clear that this is a technology that can both change what we can do as individuals, but also change the way that we come together, the way that different ecosystems are configured. So the implications are huge, positive, and some negative to watch out for. But I think the biggest takeaway for me is definitely that it's very early days and the journey ahead is going to be extremely fascinating. Curious to hear, James, you've worked a lot in this space. Curious to hear your impressions about our conversation in this series.
I think the thing that has really stuck with me is that I understood the nature of sort of Bitcoin or decentralized currencies to sort of remove central banks. I hadn't actually put the dots together to connect that idea of the blockchain to other ecosystems. I sort of imagining international organizations leveraging blockchain, but I think Anne made a really great point about, well, can we imagine a future where that international organization doesn't need to exist and that we don't need that centralization, that these sort of cross-border goods and services can be sort of enabled at scale. It's a whole reimagining of an ecosystem that is really needs support and needs sort of innovation. So that one's going to stick with me for a while. So really great conversation today.
And we've covered a lot of ground and yet we've barely scratched the surface. Any last words, anything that you think we should have mentioned, covered, that you would like the audience to take away?
I think the key thing I want everyone listening to do is to go out tonight, buy a dollar's worth of Bitcoin. But don't invest your money, invest your time. Just learn how it works, how to open a wallet, how to move it around, and start to participate in this really exciting new technology. Be a part of the blockchain community.
That's a fantastic way to end. And Connolly, thank you very much for being with us through this series. Thanks to all our audience. And please do follow us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite place to access podcasts. You can learn more at shoshinworks.com. Follow us, like us, comment, and spread the news to your friends. Thank you very much, everyone.